I asked Larry to read from Philippians chapter 3, and it's obviously a beautiful passage that Paul lays out here. There's a lot we could discuss about it. We could obviously do a whole sermon on just this passage, but the main thing I want to extract from it is just the directionality. Paul has a lot to be proud of and a lot to be ashamed of in his past, as he mentions over and over. He has a lot to be ashamed of. I'm the least of all the apostles. Why? Because I persecuted the church of God with zeal. I did things which are abominable. I was an enemy of God, and not only an enemy that's simply an enemy out of ignorance, I was actively an enemy. Very zealously an enemy of God, the same God whom I now serve, and I'm ashamed of that. And I'm not fit to be called an apostle, but because of his grace, I am an apostle. And in this passage, notice how he's looking forward, always looking forward. Verse 11, in order that I may attain to the resurrection from the dead. When's that going to happen? In the future. Nor that I have already obtained it or have already become perfect, but I press on. I guess the theme of this lesson of not being a slave to your mistakes would be precisely that. Press on. But you don't understand the shame I have. You don't understand how bad I messed up. Well, maybe you did. Paul certainly did. He was persecuting and killing those who wanted to follow God. That's a pretty big mess up. There's not a bigger mess up you can achieve. But what's he do? Well, I'm going to sit over here and I'm going to cry about it and I'm going to let it stop me from doing what I ought to do. I'm going to become a prisoner of my own mistakes. Absolutely not. I press on. Now, does that involve any humility? Do I now have to, instead of just ignoring my mistakes over there in the corner, never thinking about them, never having to really face them, never having to face the people that I've wronged? Imagine that, the first time you come and all those people you were coming to persecute and throw into prison, and you have to see them and you have to say, hey, by the way, I'm one of you guys now. Imagine the shame. Hey, that's a nice family. I was about to throw you in prison. You might have watched your father die there. Shame, agony, mental, emotional agony. But what's to be done? Well, I'm just going to give up. I'm just going to take another course. No, I'm going to face it, and I'm going to do what I ought to do. I'm going to press on. But I press on. Why? So that I may lay hold of that for which also I was laid hold of by Christ Jesus. That is, I have been given a work to do, and I've been given a work to do by Jesus Christ. So what should I do? Get to work. Get to work. Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it yet. This is not in the past yet. But one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind, both good and bad, by the way, both good and bad. He can't rest on his laurels yet. He can't say, well, I've certainly done enough. Yeah, I did some horrible things, but I've suffered some horrible things and I've achieved some great things. I've done enough. No. We're not forgetting what was bad in the past or what was good. We are forgetting what was bad in the past and what was good in the past. We're pressing forward, always looking to the future. Why? Forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward. Like the athlete finishing the contest, like the runner finishing the race. Why are they doing that? Why are they lunging forward? Because their eyes are on the finish line. That's the only thing that matters. They're not thinking about, what's lunch going to be tomorrow? They're not thinking about, did I leave the stove on? No, there's only one thing that matters. Getting to that finish line first. Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it yet, but one thing I do. Forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. This is the only thing that matters. Yes, I might have to face some difficulties. Yes, I might have to face my own ignorance, my own mistakes, but I'm going to do that. because this is the ultimate calling. Let us therefore, okay, that was me, but what about you? Let us therefore, as many as are perfect, as are complete, as are mature, have this attitude. What attitude? The same one I just laid out. And if anything you have a different attitude, God will reveal that also to you. Do you consider yourself mature? Do you know what mature looks like? You should never be just crying constantly over your mistakes or constantly patting yourself on the back for your achievements. You need to be looking forward, pressing on to the prize of the upward calling of God in Christ Jesus. We're going to look at a couple of examples of this tonight, but you think about Paul before we move on. Paul wrote more than half of the New Testament. You think about what would the situation have been if he'd said, the shame is unbearable. I cannot go on with this. I'm just going to have to quit. I can't face these Christians. I can't be taken seriously. I'm telling them to follow Jesus. I was just killing them for following Jesus. Who's going to take me seriously? I'm just going to do something else. I'm sorry. I'm repentant. But you need to find somebody else to do this. The loss would have been ours. The loss would have been not only Paul's, but the rest of us. We would have missed his contributions to us and to the New Testament and to God's kingdom. We'll see what the other people we're going to examine tonight. If they'd have done the same thing, we would have been the poor, because their contributions are vital to Christians. Yet they too had an excuse far beyond what most of us can come up with to quit. They had excuses that were quite convincing that most people could use to convince themselves, it's better I just move on. It's better I just do something else. And the first one we're going to look at is in Mark 14. Mark 14. Mark 14. Going to start in verse 43, Mark 14, verse 43. Mark 14, verse 43. Jesus is about to be betrayed and arrested. Of course, betrayed by Judas. Verse 43, immediately, while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, came up accompanied by a crowd with swords and clubs who were from the chief priests and the scribes and the elders. Now he who was betraying him had given them a signal, saying, whomever I kiss, he is the one. Seize him and lead him away under guard. After coming, Judas immediately went to him, saying, Rabbi, and kissed him. They laid hands on him and seized him, but one of those who stood by drew a sword and struck the slave of the high priest and cut off his ear. And Jesus said to them, have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me as you would against a robber? Every day I was with you in the temple teaching, and you did not seize me. But this has taken place to fulfill the scriptures. And they all left him and fled. Now who is all they? All of his disciples. All of his disciples. And a young man was following him, wearing nothing but a linen sheet over his naked body, and they seized him. But he pulled free of the linen sheet and escaped naked. Well, who was that? You know, that's kind of a weird thing to be said there, but who was that? Well, the consensus is that was John Mark. That was the author of this gospel, John Mark. And you think about the life of John Mark, this obviously, what we just read, is not exactly a highlight of John Mark. But you think about where we first come into contact with him, and he's going off on the missionary journey with Paul and Barnabas. That's great. That's fantastic. That's something to be lauded. That's something to say. That's really a good thing to do with your life. But then what happens? He abandons them. He says, this is not for me, for whatever reason, I'm going to go do something else. And then when it comes around time to do the second missionary journey, Barnabas says, hey, we're taking John Mark. And Paul says, absolutely not. And they come to heads over this. And the contention is so great that John Mark is responsible for splitting up the greatest evangelistic team in the history of the world. And you say, well, if that's not a reason to quit, I don't know what is. I'm going to be known, my legacy is going to be the guy that split up Paul and Barnabas. The guy that split up the first two missionary missionaries to the Gentiles, that's my legacy. I'm just going to go home with my tail between my legs. And Barnabas wants to take me, probably because I'm related to him or something. Who knows? Who knows what his reasons are? We don't know. Maybe he really saw something. Barnabas was, of course, an encourager. Maybe he was just encouraging John Mark. And we can find that maybe he had reason. Because it turns out that John Mark turned his life around. He said, I'm not going to be known as the person who split up Paul and Barnabas. No, no, no. I'm going to be known as one of the four writers of the Gospels. That's what I'm going to be known for. I'm going to be known for, later Paul will say, bring John Mark because he's useful. I'm not going to sit here with my tail between my legs crying about my past mistakes. I'm going to move forward. Is it embarrassing? Absolutely. Is it humiliating? Absolutely. Do I like talking about it? Absolutely not. Do I like that it's recorded for every single person to see in the Bible throughout history? No. But I do like that I had a redemption story. I do like that I was able to overcome. And he's fleeing here, abandoning Jesus. But notice, he's not the only one. You think about that. We're about to look at Peter, but all the disciples had some mistakes that would cripple most people. And what if all of them had said, no, we're not worthy, Jesus. We're not worthy to follow you at this point. We're not worthy to take on the mantle of your ambassadors to the world because, of course, we fled. Because, of course, we were scared and we fled and we scattered and we're not worthy now. You're going to have to find 12 new people. You could say, well, that's understandable. But they didn't do that. And Peter, does Peter in particular have anything that could have crippled him? Well, I think so. We're about to read it. Let's start in verse 53. Well, actually, let's, for sake of time, let's jump down a little bit. let's start in verse 60. Verse 60. The high priest stood up and came forward and questioned Jesus, saying, do you not answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you? But he kept silent and did not answer. Again, the high priest was questioning him and saying to him, are you the Christ? Are you the chosen one? The Son of the Blessed One? And Jesus said, I am. You shall see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming with the clouds of heaven. Throwback to the Old Testament. Of course, the scribes and Pharisees would be very familiar to the Old Testament. This is common language. Usually, when God comes in the clouds, it's coming in judgment as well. That's something to note as you're reading the Old Testament. Tearing his clothes, the high priest said, what further need do we have of witnesses? We have all that we need. What he's just said is worthy of death. Okay? You've heard the blasphemy. How does it seem to you? And they all condemned him to be deserving of death. These words cannot go unpunished. Some began to spit at him and to blindfold him and to beat him with their fist and to say to him, prophesy. And the officers received him with slaps in the face. Now that's one scene. Now the camera's shifting. Now we've got a different part. As verse 66, as Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came. And seeing Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, you also were with Jesus the Nazarene. But he denied it, saying, I neither know nor understand what you are talking about. And he went out onto the porch. Now remember what Peter said. What all the disciples have said, but Peter in particular was the one who breached the idea. Lord, I will never deny you. I'll die before I do that. I'll die before I deny you. And you know, this is something that, you know, it's quite common. We have the two streams, the stream of our imagination and the stream of reality. And, you know, in the warm, comfortable theater of our mind, we are just unstoppable. And we are the most righteous, the most faithful. We look at these decisions and we say, I don't even see the difficulty. But then when the confluence of these two streams happens and your imagination is dashed upon the rocks of reality, and all of a sudden you saying, yeah, I know him, is going to lead you to be dragged over there to where Jesus is and be summarily beaten and crucified. You're going to be prey to this rabid mob. All of a sudden that decision looks a little harder. All of a sudden you're not quite as righteous as you thought yourself to be. It's very easy to stand here and condemn Peter. But what would I have done? Well, honestly, Jesus probably wouldn't have called me because I wouldn't have met the righteous standards that he needed for a disciple. So I'm not going to criticize Peter too much. Peter was selected. Peter did make a mistake. Peter made a horrible mistake. But that's not what defines you. What defines you is what you do after that. Who makes mistakes? Who makes mistakes? You think about that. And you think about, what's the only way to avoid making a mistake? Well, not do anything, basically. If you don't do anything, you'll never make a mistake, I suppose. But even life, even if you try not to do anything, just living is full of challenges. So you're going to make mistakes. Unless you are God. Unless your competence is such that you are perfect. Now, more competent people will make less mistakes, and less competent people will make more mistakes. And the more difficult challenges you have, the more mistakes you'll make. So it's some multiple of the difficulty of the challenges and the frequency of the challenges and your competence. But everybody, sans God, makes mistakes. Okay? So the question is, how do you react to said mistakes? That's the question. Not if you're going... What an arrogant thing to say. I'm not going to make any mistakes. I haven't made any mistakes. Or... when I make a mistake, well, that's it. I'm going to give up. No, you should expect to make mistakes. You're human. You're flawed. You're limited. That's just human nature. The servant girl saw him and began once more to say to the bystanders, this is one of them. But again, he denied it. Now, what did Jesus told him? Before the cock crows, you're going to deny me three times. And we're told that some time passes between these denials. Do you think he's thinking about any of this? He's wondering what's going on. He's trying to be there for God. He's not like the other 10. John is also there. But he's not like the other 10 and John Mark, who have just abandoned him altogether. I'm at least trying. But it turns out it's a little more difficult than it was in my mind. Okay? Reality has struck, and it's a thorn in my pride. This is one of them. But again, he denied it, and after a little while, the bystanders were again saying to Peter, surely, surely, you are one of them. You are a Galilean too. But he began to curse and swear, I do not know this man you are talking about. I don't know the guy. Immediately,
A rooster crowed a second time, and Peter remembered how Jesus had made the remark to him, "Before a rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times." And he began to weep.
The Gospel of Luke tells us that they made eye contact. And what do you think went through Peter's mind at that time? You ever gotten a knowing nod from somebody when you do something right? That's a knowing nod. Good job. You ever gotten a knowing nod from somebody when you do something wrong?
I know what you did, Peter. I may be out of hearing distance, but I know exactly what happened. You remember what I said. And what's the effect? He began to weep bitterly.
Now think about that. Think about being that guy that stood up, not knowing exactly what was going on, but said, "I will die before I deny you." And now here you are. You've denied him three times. What would be the easiest thing to do? I'm going to skip town. These people are never going to hear from me again. Those other 11 apostles, or those other 10 apostles, let's not count Judas. Those other 10 apostles are never going to be able to rub this in my face. They're never going to be able to say, "Oh, there's the guy that talks big." But when it comes time to actually do, what happens? He caves like the rest of us. He says he thinks he's better than us, but turns out not so much. I'm not going to face that down. I'm not going to face the shame. I'm not going to face my mistakes. But of course we know that Peter did face his mistakes. He did not skip town. And in fact, let's look over at John chapter 20. Or I think it's John chapter 21. John chapter 21. And we're coming to the end here. John chapter 21. We only have one more person to look at, and that will be quick. John chapter 21. John chapter 21 is kind of strange in that at the end of John chapter 20, it seems like that's the perfect ending of the book. Seems like this should be the end of the book. "Therefore, many other signs Jesus also performed in the present." First, it had the great confession, "My Lord and my God." All these things are building up to this confession. And then it says, "Therefore, many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these have been written so that you may believe that Jesus, the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." You'd say, cut, finish, that's it. But we have this epilogue. And there's some very important things in this epilogue. We have a refutation of something that early Christians seemed to believe, that John would not die until Jesus came again. John says, no, that's not what he said. Listen to what he actually said. But before that, let's look at, verse 15. So if you remember in the verses before this, they were fishing and they couldn't catch anything. And Jesus says, "Hey, try the other side." And they do it. And they catch 153 fish. Now, people want to say what that number means. Who knows what that number means, if it means anything. But they recognize from the amount of fish that they were able to catch after catching nothing all night, it's Jesus. And they run to the shore, and then they eat. And then in John chapter 21, verse 15, "So when they'd finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?' He said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him, 'Tend my lambs.' He said to him again a second time, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' He said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him, 'Shepherd my sheep.' And he said to him the third time, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, 'Do you love me?' And he said to him, 'Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you.' Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. Okay, now, very quickly, I'll point out that there are some different words here used for various things. Notice that he says, tend my sheep, shepherd my sheep, tend my sheep. And in the Greek, there are different words for love that are used. Now, some people will make a big deal out of that, and maybe there is a big deal, but I'm not sure about that, because is there a difference between tend and shepherd as well? It seems like you'd have to be consistent, but either way, what is the background of this? Do you think that Peter's denial would be weighing on his mind? Just looking at human nature, do you think that would be something that was, you know, crossing his mind every once in a while? I just denied him three times and then ran away. And then we have the appearances, but, you know, we've never really talked this out. Yeah, that's probably going to be on somebody's mind. And you look at Paul, and even late into his life, decades after it happened, he's talking about what he had done, the horrible things he had done before he became a Christian. It's not something that's going to leave you. Well, then I can just run away from it. No, you have to face it down. You have to, it reminds me of Genesis, what God says to Cain. The sin is crouching at the door and it wants to have dominion over you. Well, what do? You handle it. You do something about it. You take control of it. Don't let it take control of you. Okay? You take control of your problems. Don't let your problems take control of you. So do you love me, Simon Peter? Yes. Okay. Well, do I want you to now, I want everyone to say, look, this man is unfit for service. He should be shamed and he should be sent away. No. Exact opposite. I want everyone to accept him just as they had to accept Paul and just as they had to accept John Mark. And I want him to be in my kingdom. And I want him to be fruitful in my kingdom. I'm going to tell you what you're going to do, Peter. You're going to shepherd my sheep. You're not going to be on some secondary rung in this kingdom. In fact, in 1 Peter chapter 5, he says, I'm an elder. I exhort you. I'm an apostle. I exhort you. When the chief shepherd comes, he will do. He's not the Pope. The chief shepherd is Jesus. But he is an elder and he is an apostle. Tend my sheep. There's work for you to do. For us, looking at our own mistakes, we can't let now, obviously, most of our mistakes are not as dramatic as the ones we've looked at tonight, but they can be quite grave. They can be quite debilitating. They can cripple us, and they can make us want to just run away without having to face them, without having to face the shame that they bring, and everybody knowing about my mistakes, and everybody knowing about my weakness, and everybody knowing that I'm not as perfect as I would like them to believe, that I'm human. We have to, in the face of that, facing it, say, okay, that is me. I'm going to humble myself. I'm going to own my mistakes. And then what am I going to do? I'm going to press on. What is the work that there is for me to do in the kingdom of God? For Peter, it was shepherd my sheep, or tend my sheep. For Paul, it was go to the Gentiles and go before kings and go before all these rulers and magistrates and spread the gospel and write half of the New Testament. What is your role? What is my role? And will I let my failures, my past failures, stop me? Well, let me provide, as we close, the counterexample. What about Judas? He's the counterexample. Did he make a mistake? Absolutely. And what did he do? Exactly the thing I'm telling you not to do. I made a mistake so grave I cannot recover from it. I can't face all these other apostles. I can't face Jesus. I can't face anybody. What am I going to do? I'm going to run away, and I'm going to run away, and I'm going to kill myself because I can't face the shame. I can't turn this around. I'm not worthy to turn this around. Nobody would have me. Critical mistake. Critical mistake, and he's going to pay for that for all eternity. What should he have done? Repent. and been baptized and turned around and said, yes, that was horrible what I did, but through the grace of God, I can now preach to you the gospel that God has unfurled to all men. I'm going to turn around and I'm going to be useful. No matter how great your mistakes are, your attitude must be to turn around. Now, the natural power, the natural attraction is to do exactly what Judas did. That's the natural thing. I'm going to run away. It seems so much easier. Nobody's going to mock me. Nobody's going to belittle me. Nobody's going to tell me I told you so. Nobody's going to even know. I'm just going to go. I'm going to kill myself. And I'm going to escape, the great escape. No, that's a fatal error. That's an eternal error. That's an error that he'll be regretting throughout all eternity. So for us, let our mistakes be temporal, not eternal. Don't let your mistakes drift over into the eternal. Say, yes, that was horrible. That was something I never should have done, and I'm ashamed to have done it, but I'm not going to let it stop me from going forward. I'm not going to say, well, somebody who's done that can never be of service to God. No. That's precisely the opposite thing that the New Testament, in fact, the whole Bible, if we had time, we could talk about David and many others. That's precisely the opposite of what the Bible teaches us. Press on. I'll go back to Paul. We press on until the very end, until we obtain that high calling that God has set before us. Not that we've already reached it, not that we've already obtained it, but we go until the end. Are we going to make mistakes in the future? What do you think about that? Is anybody so bold, so brave to say, well, all my mistakes were in the past. There will be no mistakes in the future. No, there are going to be mistakes in the future, but we have to manage them. We have to deal with them. And we have to put them in subjection to us, not let them subject us to their will, which is to stop going forward. So if anyone has any needs, we'd ask that you come forward as we sing the song of invitation.